lied to her when he said the doctors had found nothing. But that wasn't the whole story. He'd promised to her face that he'd tell her as soon as anything was confirmed, but she would recognize it for the dodge that it had been. Although, since he was dying, she'd probably let him off the hook. Mac drifted off to sleep, feeling more content than he had in months, and awoke just after dawn the following morning, feeling frisky. He looked at his wife, and as he had done so often during their close to 40 years of marriage, he marveled at her beauty and the fact that despite his having been a penniless Oklahoma boy with a hardscrabble past, she'd chosen to spend her life with him. He dipped his head and kissed her shoulder, then nibbled his way to her neck. He had her naked and panting even before he seduced her from sleep, and he made sweet love to her until they both lay sated and replete. He held her, gently stroking a finger up and down her arm, reluctant to break the joy of the moment, but knowing he must. "I'm going to tell them, Allison." She slowly stiffened. Almost half a minute passed before she asked, "When?" "This morning." She drew in a deep breath, then exhaled in a rush. "Oh, Mac. Yeah. It's good. I'm glad you've made this decision. It needs to happen. You, actually both of us, can use their support." They showered and dressed and went downstairs together. Mac fried the bacon while Ollie tackled waffles, and as the kids wandered downstairs and to the coffee bar, a bittersweet combination of sadness and pride filled Mac. He glanced at Ollie. She was looking back at him. In the way of couples long together, they communicated without words. "We did good. Yes, we did. I wish I didn't have to share this burden with them." "I know, but it's time. A shared burden is more easily borne." When breakfast was finished, the younger generation rose to tend the dishes. Mac took Allie's hand and said, "I'm going to start a fire in the family room. When you're done, join us there, would you please? Your mother and I have some news to share." The boys didn't appear to pick up on the note of tension in Mac's voice, but the way Caitlin's sharp gaze darted toward her mother's told Mac that his daughter had noticed. Allie kept her smile serene and pretended not to see. Mac felt the tremble in her hand as he tugged her from the kitchen. Mac and Allie's home had 3 fireplaces, 2 of which were outfitted with gas logs. The family room fireplace had been designed as Mac's plaything. Like so many men, he enjoyed playing with fire. Allie took her customary seat on the sofa while he stacked the kindling and nursed a flame to life. By the time the kids wandered in, he had a nice fire burning. Mac held out his hand toward Allie, and she rose and stood beside him, their hands clasped. Seated on the sofa, Caitlin shifted nervously. Mac drew a breath and began. "A number of months ago, I began to notice weakness in my right hand, some tingling and twitches. I figured I had a pinched nerve. When the symptoms worsened and my left hand became involved, I saw a doctor. He identified a whole list of possibilities and he ordered a battery of tests." Mac glanced at Caitlin and added, "They didn't find anything, but they ruled out cancer, which had been my biggest fear." "Dad," Stephen began, "let me finish, son, and then I'll answer questions. I was referred to a specialist and eventually ended up at a hospital in Boston. In October, we were given a tentative diagnosis. However, due to the fact that this condition is one that is diagnosed by eliminating other issues rather than pinpointing something wrong, we were told to wait 6 months. So I have an appointment next month for reevaluation, and at that point, they'll know if their suspicions are correct."
"What suspicions, Dad?" Caitlin burst out. "Bottom line it, would you please?"
He nodded, squeezed Allie's hand tight, and broke his children's hearts.
"It's ALS. Amyotrophic
lateral sclerosis. Stephen dropped his chin to his chest. Chase shoved to his feet and paced the room. Lori covered her mouth with her hands and Caitlin gazed from one to the other with a panicked lack of understanding. What is ALS? Stephen and Chase spoke simultaneously. Lou Gehrig disease. That, Mac's daughter recognized. She curled her feet up under her and slumped back against the sofa cushions in an abbreviated fetal position as the cloud of an incurable, fatal diagnosis settled over the room. Chase burst out.
Tentative. You said tentative, so you don't know for sure. It's not 100%.
That's right, Allie responded. We still have hope, and I actually have a good feeling about it. Even if we do get bad news, medicine is making strides in slowing down the effects of the disease. The FDA recently approved a new medicine that does that.
In a quiet tone, Stephen asked, All this time, and you didn't tell us?
Yes, Mac rubbed the back of his neck. I wanted to spare you. The waiting is hard. I understand how you might feel that way. But it's dishonest. That's not the way you raised us.
Matt glanced toward his wife. Her gaze clearly said, I told you so. But as he surveyed the pain on the faces of his children, he knew he wouldn't change a thing.
Chase asked, When is your appointment, Dad?
March 20th.
The first day of spring, Lori said. She rose from her seat and crossed the room to her husband. Wrapping her arms around him in a comforting hug, she said, I'm going to take that as a good sign. Wearing a watery smile, Allie leaned into Mac. That's an excellent point, Lori. It reminds me of something Celeste would say. For a time during the past 5 months, Mac had given Hope the good old college try. He'd never managed to pull it off. What he'd found during recent weeks was acceptance. The Timberlake family would mourn him, but they would be okay. Stephen and his family were settled in Texas and thriving. Chase had finally found his way home to Lori. And Caitlin? Well, it was good that she'd moved home to Colorado. Allie would have her to lean on and vice versa. If Tarkington ever pulled his head out, he'd be there for them too. One by one, Mac gazed at his family. The loves of his life. A fine life. A life well lived. Yes. He'd done good. Sweat poured down Josh's face as he finished the cool-down portion of his workout on the elliptical. He was whipped, sadly out of shape and weak as a kitten. Nevertheless, he felt better than he had in months. His ribs still ached, and he needed to be careful when he wielded the snow shovel. But due to the medicines Dr. Rose Cicero had prescribed and the support system she'd helped him find, the pain and, more importantly, the cravings were under control. He should have gone to Rose with his problem weeks ago. The cool-down complete, he headed for the shower. Having slept in, he was getting a late start today, though it was a different type of sleep from the heavy, lethargic kind he'd suffered of late. Rather than awakening tired, he greeted the morning feeling rested, a true blessing. He stripped and climbed into the steaming shower, where he indulged in an extended stay. A long, hot shower on a cold morning was one of the good things in life and something to be appreciated. When he reached the stage just short of prune, he lathered up and rinsed, then reached for his shampoo. He accidentally picked up Caitlin's instead. Because she'd been using the guest bathroom since the accident, she'd missed it when she'd packed. This bottle had occupied his shower since they'd become lovers last fall. He probably should give it back to her. Salon shampoos were stupid expensive. He just couldn't make himself do it. When he flipped open the lid and sniffed it, he could almost pretend that she was again sharing the shower with him. Later, while he dressed, his thoughts turned to that exchange with her father the night before last. He wondered if, in the fog of his hunger for relief, he'd imagined the conversation. Had Mac Timberlake really given Josh his blessing where Caitlin was concerned? Nah, Josh must have been delirious. Wearing a gray Broncos sweatshirt and jeans, he strolled to his kitchen where Penny lay sleeping in her plastic clothes basket bed. She lifted her head at his entrance. Good morning, girl. You ready to get up and rolling? As he carried her outside, he planned the day ahead. He had three snowmobiles waiting for tune-ups that he planned to tackle first. Depending on how those went, he might jump into the ATV engine overhauls that Cam Murphy had dropped off late last week. The goal was to stay busy, keeping his body and mind occupied. Then, tonight, he would attend the 12-step group that met three times a week at St. Stephen's. It was a very small group. Last night, he'd been one of only four people to show up. It had been hard to walk into the room the first time, because the anonymity offered by the city-based groups he'd attended in the past wasn't available in a town the size of Eternity Springs. But he'd been welcomed and supported, and he'd left the meeting encouraged and wondering why in the hell he hadn't looked for a meeting weeks ago. Of course, he knew the answer. He hadn't wanted to betray his secret to Caitlin. With a sigh, Josh set Penny down and let her scamper in the snow, which continued to fall in fat flakes, laying a soft, silent blanket of white upon the land. Spring seemed so very far away. Penny chased a squirrel into a tree, but when she turned her attention to the woodpile, Josh called a halt to the play. He dried her with a towel, then carried her inside and placed her into her wheelchair. "Do you know what today is, sweetheart? It's Canned Dog Food Saturday." He wasn't positive that she recognized the words for her weekly treat, but she did make an excited lap around the kitchen while he filled her dog bowl. Then, with the dog tended to, he saw to his own breakfast, talking to her as had become his habit of late. It made the house seem less lonely. "I think it's an oatmeal kind of day, Penny. Don't you?" He dawdled over breakfast, and for the first time in months read the online versions of the three newspapers to which he subscribed, the Wall Street Journal, the Denver Post, and the weekly Eternity Times. Perusing the ad for the Trading Post grocery store, he made a mental note to stock up on the New York strips that were on sale. A man could never have too many steaks in the freezer, especially now that his appetite had returned. When he finished his breakfast and loaded his dirty dishes into the dishwasher, he realized he almost felt like a normal person again. That's why, when someone knocked on his front door, he answered it with a smile on his face. The smile immediately died. "Caitlin, what's wrong?" She gazed at him with tormented eyes. "Josh, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have come here, but I need you. It's Dad. Before, he said it wasn't a big deal, but at breakfast this morning, he told us... Oh, Josh, he told us that he's dying." Josh briefly closed his eyes, his heart aching for her and her family. He pulled her into the house and into his arms. Sobbing, she collapsed against him. He held her, letting her cry, stroking her back up and down, and murmuring soothing sounds. She babbled against his chest, but he couldn't make out the words. Slowly, he guided her toward the big chair, sitting in front of the fireplace. He sat, pulled her into his lap, and let her fall apart. She cried until she had no more tears to shed, and when she finally quieted, he asked, "Can you tell me about it, honey?" In fits and starts, interrupted by hiccups, she did. Josh's stomach sank as he pieced together her tale. "ALS. Oh, man, that's rough. I'm so sorry, Caitlin. That's frightening. Waiting is the worst thing, and to have to wait 6 months, that's gnarly." "I knew something was wrong. I knew it. And I asked them and asked them, and they lied to me." She squirmed out of his hold and sat up. With accusation in her voice, she added, "Like you lied to me. Lies of omission are still lies." Josh considered his response. He needed to have an honest talk with Caitlin, but now was not the time. She'd come to him for comfort and support. This moment was about her.
Don't be too hard on your parents, Kate. I don't doubt that they wanted to spare you worry. They protected you. That's what you do for those you love. Plus, I imagine they needed time to come to terms with the situation themselves. This is your father's journey. He gets to decide the route. Don't beat him up over the choices he made. Now is not the time.
You're right. She sighed and snuggled closer to him. Now that I know what he and Mom were going through, I understand what I was seeing when I sensed something was wrong. They both have been tense and on edge, stressed. But something has changed, with Dad at least, and it's happened in the past week or so. He's mellowed.
Acceptance. She considered it, then nodded.
Yes, I think he has come to terms, at least in part, with what is happening to him.
I would imagine he's been going through a grieving process. Acceptance is the final stage.
Sounding like a lost little girl, she said,
I'm just beginning the journey. I have to tell you, Josh, it sucks.
I know, sweetheart.
She cried a little more, her tears softer this time, more sorrowful than devastated. When she finished, she fell into an exhausted sleep. Josh was content to hold her. He'd be happy to hold her from now until her family's wait ended with Mac's appointment on the first day of spring. He wanted to be her rock, be her support, to do for her like she'd done for him in the aftermath of the accident. Because that's what people do when they love one another, and Josh loved Caitlin, whether he wanted to or not. She didn't stir for almost an hour. And he spent that time watching her, studying her face and features like he would a masterpiece hanging in a museum. She was a masterpiece to him, an exquisite combination of beauty and emotion and heart. He was about to doze off himself when Caitlin finally stirred. She sat up and gave him a sleepy smile, and Josh couldn't help himself. He kissed her. It was a stupid thing to do, a selfish thing to do, certainly not in keeping with the guidelines by which he was trying to live his life.
But then she kissed him back, and his craving for her eclipsed any other hunger he'd ever known. No medicine could treat this need, no amount of therapy. The only 12 steps that would satiate this desire were those it would take to reach his bed. Josh simply wasn't strong enough to resist Caitlin Timberlake. Journal entry. Love is patient. Love is kind. It is not jealous. It is not pompous. It is not inflated. It is not rude. It does not seek its own interests. It is not quick-tempered. It does not brood over injury. It does not rejoice over wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. 1 Corinthians 13:4-7. For the first time in my life, I get it. Chapter 21.
When the fog of lust finally cleared, Caitlin went from limp as a noodle to strung tight as knotted fishing line. What in the world had she done? She'd gone crawling to Josh like a needy child, that's what. And what had it solved? Nothing. Her father was still sick, and she'd thrown her righteous resistance under the bus. Caitlin was ashamed of herself. She'd used him. That was poorly done of her. Not that he likely cared. He was a man, after all. Pity sex was still sex, and he'd been in a dry spell. With his ribs healed, he had probably been pretty itchy and glad to have it scratched. Now what? Was there a way to get out of this with her pride intact? How should she act? What did it matter? Daddy is dying. That's all that matters.
Despair returned with reality. Without looking at Josh, she rolled out of bed, retrieved her clothing, and fled to the bathroom to dress. Tears had welled up inside her again, and she desperately wanted to hold them back, but she couldn't stop the flood. She felt cold, both inside and out.
so she turned on the shower and stepped beneath the steaming spray. Her gaze immediately fell upon her shampoo and her conditioner, and her heart gave another twist. She'd forgotten all about those two bottles. Why hadn't he moved them? Had he always believed she'd come back? She'd given him no reason to think so. She hadn't spoken to him once since he threw her out. Did he think that all he needed to do was snap his fingers and she'd come crawling back? He didn't even have to snap his fingers. The truth of it made her feel raw. She wished she could dissolve and disappear down the drain, right along with the soap, the shampoo, and her tears. And to think that she'd awaken this morning happy as a clam and looking forward to the weekend. If the weather held, she had planned to do some cross-country skiing. Gliding through a silent, snow-covered forest offered the perfect opportunity for thinking. After weeks of avoiding the subject, she'd planned to do some serious thinking about the state of her relationship with Josh. How quickly plans change. Angry at herself, her parents, the world, she twisted off the water. She dried herself with one of his fluffy brown towels and dressed. Then she could no longer delay. At least I'm not crying anymore. Hoping against hope that he'd gone for one of his walks, Caitlin left the bathroom. He was wearing jeans and a red flannel shirt he'd yet to button, and sat on the side of his bed facing the bathroom door. Her gaze dipped to his scar. It looked better. A lot better. He spoke her name, steady and strong, and then asked, "What do you need from me?" "Love, support, honesty, your heart, your soul, your everything, because that's what I've given you." She cleared her throat and cut to the heart of the problem. "Tell me about J.B. Trammell." Josh didn't know what he'd expected her to say, but that wasn't it. He'd been thinking about Mac and the Timberlake family, trying to find ways he could help them navigate these troubled waters. He did have one idea, but he needed to do a little research before he brought it up. Nor was he ready to talk about J.B. Trammell. He wasn't prepared. It was one thing to admit his problem to a physician, but something else entirely to do it to the woman he loved. The woman he loved. He loved her. And he knew her. She wouldn't let him get by with hitting the bullet points like Rose had. He'd have to tell her the whole ugly truth, the parts she wouldn't find by Googling. Could he do it? Even in rehab, he'd never told anyone the entire story, and he wasn't far enough along in his 12-step journey to manage it today. "I can't do that, Caitlin." She held his gaze for a long minute. He thought she might push him on it, and maybe a part of him wished she would. But then she shrugged. Silently, she walked past him, and a moment later he heard the kitchen door open. Josh waited, holding his breath. And close. He shut his eyes and fell back onto the bed. That afternoon, he took a walk. He walked a lot these days. The cold air and physical exertion cleansed his mind and sapped the energy from the demons that continued to plague him. The walks also helped fill up the empty hours and days without Caitlin. First he walked north and south, up Aspen Street and down Spruce and up Pinyon and down Cottonwood. Then he walked east on the odd-numbered streets and west on the evens until he walked the entire grid of Eternity Springs. After that, he crossed the footbridge over icy Angel Creek to the grounds of Angel's Rest. He didn't know he intended to talk to Celeste until he knocked on the door of her office. She looked up from a computer monitor and smiled. "Hello, Joshua. What a nice surprise. Do you have a few minutes, Celeste? I need some advice." "Of course. Please come in and have a seat." She gestured toward an occasional chair upholstered in cabbage roses. "I'm thrilled to have distraction from this pesky bookwork. It doesn't matter how many people I hire to help me with this business, there are still things no one but I can do. What can I help you with, my dear?" Josh took the seat she indicated, but almost immediately popped back up onto his feet. "I need you to do your wise woman thing." She sat back in her chair and steepled her hands in front of her. My wise woman thing? Yes, you know. He made circles with his hand. I've heard about it ever since I came to town. People say that time and time again, whenever someone is in crisis, you have an uncanny way of showing up and saying exactly the right thing that they need to hear. Then they solve their problems and you give them a necklace and everyone lives happily ever after. Her ice blue eyes twinkled. People say that, do they? Yes. And you're in crisis? Yes. Crisis over what? Well, it's complicated. Most crises are. Pacing the room, Josh raked his fingers through his hair. Caitlin wants something from me that I can't give. Not with the way things are now, anyway. That's where you come in, I hope. Where I come in? I need you to give me that perfect soundbite of wisdom that I need to hear to get past this fear of mine. You're afraid of something. Terrified. I'm a spineless, gutless, sissified coward. So says the man who dove in front of a moving car to save a child. Yeah, well, that's different. Physical bravery is easy compared to putting yourself on the line emotionally. There's no pill I can pop for this. That's what gets a person started down this path, you know. Somebody lets you down and makes you feel terrible, so you take something to feel better, and it's a vicious cycle. I don't want to feel terrible. I don't want to be ashamed. I don't want to fake my way through life. Been there, done that, have the star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. What do you want, Joshua? I want real. My life here in Eternity Springs is real. Caitlin is real. What I feel for her is real. What wisdom do you have for me, Celeste? Give me something like you gave Brick or Cam Murphy or Luca Romano. People around here talk about it all the time. Tell me to leap like a lunatic. Tell me to forget the past and decide who I am today and discover who I will be tomorrow. Remind me that my trials have made me stronger, that I'm not a walking disaster, that I will triumph over my demons. Tell me that nothing defeats a valiant heart. Or how about the one about peace being a process, or love being a miraculous medicine? I said all those things? Yes, and hearing them changed lives, instilled courage. Look at the people in this town. Nobody goes through life without some bruises. Many of our friends have suffered real tragedies, but they healed. If I've heard it once, I've heard it 14 times. Eternity Springs is where broken hearts come to heal. Well, that is true. Yes, and broken hearts come in different forms. But most of them at one time or another are afraid of something. We're afraid to leap in case we might fall. Afraid to risk in case we might fail. Afraid to reach in case we might miss. When you let fear be your guide, you don't live a genuine life. You live a fake life, a Hollywood life. If you're not content with fake, then you need to man up and suck it up and leap and risk and reach. Overcoming the fear will bring healing. I see. Yeah. Josh stopped his pacing, shoved his hands in the back pockets of his jeans, and nodded. Yeah, okay. That's good. That makes sense. He drew in a deep breath, then exhaled a heavy sigh. Yeah, right. He beamed a smile toward her. Thank you, Celeste. I knew you'd have something for me. Dryly, she said, I'm glad I could help, Josh. Me too. Really, I owe you big time. If there's ever anything I can do for you, just let me know. A tune-up, oil change, autographs, maybe a movie premiere, I'm your man. I'll remember that. Great. Well, I've taken up enough of your time. I'd better let you get back to your bookkeeping. He walked around the desk, leaned down, and kissed her cheek. You are an angel, Celeste. I adore you. As he sauntered from the room, he heard her say, Oh, my boy, I adore you, too. He was halfway down Angel's Rest front steps when he snapped his fingers and turned around. A moment later, he ducked his head back into Celeste's office. Excuse me, Celeste, one more thing. Do you think I could have one of those necklaces? Her laughter floated on the air like feathers. She opened her desk drawer, removed one of the official Angel's Rest blazons that she awarded to townspeople who learned to accept love's healing grace, and tossed it toward Josh. He caught it on the fly, brought it to his mouth for a theatrical kiss, then held it up and said, "I have a sneaky feeling that this is going to be my good luck charm." An hour later, he knocked on Mac and Allie Timberlake's front door. Mac answered,
"Hello, Tarkington. Caitlin isn't here. She and her brothers have gone snowmobiling. I'm not here to see her. I wanted to talk to you. She told me about the family meeting this morning."
From the pocket of his coat, he removed a Tarkington Automotive business card and handed it to Mac.
"The name and number on the back. You should call him. He's a neurologist who has made a name for himself as a diagnostician. He's..."
Mac read the name and interrupted.
"I recognize the name. I tried to get an appointment with him. He couldn't see me for 18 months. You have an appointment with him next week if you want to take it."
Mac's head snapped up, and he pinned Josh with a narrow-eyed look.
"How? His son and I were in rehab together years ago. I helped him one time when he overdosed, saved his life. We still stay in touch. You should go see him. I won't say anything to anybody if you prefer, but you really should go."
He turned and started up the walk to his car. Mac called after him.
"Josh? Thank you. You're welcome. I wish you the best of luck."
Caitlin was having a very realistic dream because she smelled bacon. She knew it was a dream because she was home and alone in her house. Her mother might be the cooking queen, but she drew the line at breaking into her children's houses and cooking breakfast. But darned if that didn't smell legit. Without opening her eyes, she felt along the top of her nightstand for her phone and picked it up. Checked the screen. 7:33 on Sunday? Why am I awake? And why do I still smell bacon? She sat up, feeling a little uneasy. This was really weird. She grabbed her robe from the foot of the bed where she'd left it, slipped her feet into the Minnie Mouse slippers Lori had given her for Christmas, and crossed to her bedroom door. Why was it closed? She'd left it open, hadn't she? She always slept with her bedroom door open. Her heart began to pound. It crossed her mind to call 911, but really, what could she say? Someone broke in and is cooking bacon? Truly concerned now, she quietly turned the knob, carefully opened the door, and gasped. A flower bomb had gone off in her hallway. Vases filled with cut flowers and potted flowering plants in a rainbow of colors lined a path down her hallway. Yellow daffodils and pink crocuses and white begonias and red geraniums, pink calla lilies and orange tulips and blue hydrangeas, carnations and chrysanthemums and peonies. That was frying bacon she'd smelled. She could hear it sizzle. She stepped to the kitchen doorway and her mouth gaped. The hallway had been filled with flowers, but the kitchen was stuffed to the rafters with them. Almost every flat surface was occupied, if not by full flowers, then by rose petals. Josh stood at the stove wielding kitchen tongs. Seeing her, he smiled. Perhaps the smile was a bit nervous. Perhaps.
"Good morning, beautiful."
Caitlin didn't feel beautiful at the moment. She really, really wished she'd detoured to the bathroom to brush her hair and maybe pee. Which of the obvious questions should I ask first?
"Let me see if I can answer them without you having to bother. I need to talk to you. I wanted someplace private, where we wouldn't be interrupted. I figured the chances of getting you to my house hovered between slim and none. You never asked for your key back, so talking here was an obvious solution. I thought that since I am here, I might as well cook breakfast. But why don't you have a seat, sweetheart? Breakfast will be ready in just a few minutes."
And the flowers? What was the purpose of the flowers? His failure to mention them made them the elephant in the room, and only made her want an explanation about them more. But damned if she'd ask. If he could pretend they weren't there, then so could she. I'll be right back. She fled to the bathroom and returned 5 minutes later with her hair and teeth brushed and wearing jeans and a sweatshirt and her garden shoes. If he could make subtle statements, then so could she. Josh noted the shoes with a ghost of a grin, then handed her a mug of steaming black coffee. He set 2 plates of bacon, scrambled eggs, and toast on the table. Dig in. She didn't see a reason to refuse, so she picked up her fork and tasted the eggs. The meal was no different from the dozens they'd shared over the past 6 months. He told her a story about Penny and a tennis ball and asked her questions about the goings-on at Gingerbread House. When they'd both finished, he topped off her coffee and insisted she remain seated while he tended the dishes. Caitlin shrugged and lifted her cup. It's your garden party. Through it all, anticipation hummed through her like a bumblebee on a nectar high. When he'd loaded the last dish into the dishwasher and dried the last pan and returned it to the cabinet, she watched him take a deep breath. When he turned to face her, she held her own breath. What do you want to know about J.B. Trammell? Hope was the tender sprout of a crocus bulb pushing through a blanket of snow. Everything important. A reference point will help. How much do you know already? Did you Google me? Yes, but only so far as Wikipedia. He nodded. Okay, then. Well, I guess the first important point to make is that I was no victim. I was born into a long line of gifted actors going back to silent film. They're Hollywood royalty. I never went without food or a roof above my head. I had every toy any boy could want. I truly did live in the lap of luxury. But? He sighed. My father was the poster boy for great, tormented actors. He was an alcoholic. He battled depression. I suspect he was bipolar, but that was never diagnosed. He did marry my mother, but he was never faithful. The 2 half-sisters I have, who were close to my age, were evidence of that. My mother knew about his infidelity. My earliest memories are of arguments, shouting, screaming, and throwing things. They divorced when I was 6. He died not long afterward. I read about that, Caitlin said. He had a heart attack. That was the official story. The truth is he committed suicide. I was with the nanny when she found him. Caitlin covered her mouth with her hand. Oh, Josh, that's terrible. I'm so sorry. He shrugged. Beyond the fright of the moment itself, his death wasn't that difficult for me. I didn't have much of a relationship with him, so I didn't grieve. Caitlin doubted that, but she didn't interrupt. My mom was another story. Despite the sorry way he treated her, she loved him. She was devastated after his death. That's when she decided his great acting legacy needed to live on in me. I'd done a few commercials already, but after my father died, she started pushing and pushing. I auditioned for every role that came along, and I landed a lot of them. I honestly liked the work. Life was pretty good. But then I got the role in Star Seeker, and shortly after it released, Franco Rinaldi came into our lives. Franco Rinaldi. She knew that name. The drummer in Wave Runners? Yep. My mom fell hard for him. We moved into his house in Beverly Hills, and that's when my life turned upside down. I got up close and personal with sex, drugs, and rock and roll. You were how old? 8. Almost 9. I'll go into detail if you wish, but I don't know that it serves a purpose. The pertinent highlights, or actually lowlights, are these. I smoked my first cigarette at 8, and my first joint at 9. I was popping pills by 12 and shooting up by the time I was 14. Caitlin caught her breath. Shooting up?
Heroin. I'd done 3 stints in rehab before I turned 21.
Oh, Josh. She closed her eyes. She'd suspected something like this. It was Hollywood, after all. But she never guessed to the extent of it. She'd noticed he didn't drink, but she never really thought anything about it. He was a health-conscious guy. He drank carrot juice, for goodness sake.
I'm so sorry. Where was your mother in all of this?
In and out of rehab herself. Still, we continued to work. We were on location in Oklahoma when her life really blew up, and I got shuttled into the system. God was watching out for me, because I got placed with the Christophers,
Brick's adoptive parents.
Josh nodded. They saved me. They helped me get clean and stay clean. In the Oklahoma suburbs, I left J.B. Trammell behind. I built a life, and I was happy. And I seldom thought about my California world. I stayed clean and sober for 7 years.
She sensed what he was going to say next.
Sure enough, she was right. Then, wham, I'm tornado bait. When I lost my fiancé and her daughter, the old days started whispering to me and I slipped. Actually, I fell hard and went back to heroin. Again, the Christophers stepped up to help. Getting clean again almost killed me.
But you did it?
Yes, but my confidence in my ability to maintain my sobriety took a serious hit. Then a couple years later, springtime rolls around again. A twister wiped me out again. Brick offered me a change of scenery, and I jumped at it.
Caitlin wanted, needed to touch him.
But his arms were crossed and his walls were up, and a no trespassing sign flashed neon across his forehead. Instead, she fluffed the satin bow on a pot of daffodils and said, "You built a new life here as Josh Trammell. J.B. is a junkie. Josh isn't." He turned away from her and stared at the kitchen window as he added, "But it was touch and go for a time, Caitlin. Touch and go."
Finally, she put the clues together and things began to make sense. The accident. They gave you opioids in the hospital. Oh, Josh, why didn't you say anything? He didn't respond, and she could deny herself no more. She touched his arm and was grateful that he didn't shake her off. His voice was a low, tormented rumble.
"Because I was scared, senseless, and I was stupid. I didn't want to admit my weakness to anyone, much less you. I was ashamed, so very ashamed. It didn't help anything that the pain was such a bitch, because that made it difficult to think straight. So armed with the medical degree I got out of a cereal box along with a secret decoder ring, I played Physician, Heal Thyself." Dread rolled through her stomach.
"What did you do, Josh? What did you take?"
He had a white-knuckled grip on the countertop. "Nothing. I was afraid of getting hooked again, so I flushed my pills and went cold turkey and made your life miserable because I was such an ass. Then the day I sent you away, I threw in the towel, took the pain pills, and couldn't stop."
Caitlin took a moment to absorb the revelation. Then she gave his arm a backhanded slap and stepped back. "Of all the stupid, witless, brainless things to do, you idiot! Surely there is someone who could have helped you? No wonder you were such a jerk to everyone in the weeks after Christmas. Why didn't you say anything to me? Why didn't you ask for help?"
"Because, like you said, I was an idiot."
Josh released his grip and turned away from the window. He met her gaze with a solemn sincerity in his own.
"I was slow, but I did get there eventually. I finally did ask for help. Rose Cicero gave me a lecture the likes of which I've never had before, and we made a plan. One of its elements is my return to a 12-step program. And that brings us here this morning to this confession."
He reached out and took her hands in his. His striking gray eyes pleaded for understanding as he said,
"I wasn't prepared for this yesterday, Caitlin. I was afraid to tell you the truth. I had to work through it. I failed you yesterday, and for weeks before that. I'm sorry. I am so very sorry. I hope you can find it in your heart to forgive me.
Her first instinct was to tell him that, of course, she forgave him. Caitlin had never been one to hold grudges. When someone hurt her, an honest expression of regret and a request for forgiveness usually was all it took for her to let bygones be bygones. But something held her back. She wasn't exactly sure what. Okay, she did know what it was. In all this talk, he'd never said the words she needed to hear. Those three powerful little words. Josh said, "I was wrong." Okay, those three were pretty good, but they weren't the ones she wanted most. Damned if she'd ask for them directly. She studied him intently and saw no hint of doubt or deceit. He'd confessed to fear about being honest with her about his past. Was fear keeping his lips zipped when it came to what she needed most to hear? Maybe. So far, this morning had been about facts, not emotions. Maybe he needed a little encouragement. Maybe he needed her to say the words first. Perhaps. But that really didn't work for her. He'd hurt her badly. His words and actions meant more than those of any other. Frankly, she needed a bit of groveling to soothe her wounded heart. Isn't that what the flowers are about? A bouquet of flowers had long been part and parcel of a male apology. It made sense that in Josh's mind, dozens of bouquets amplified the effort. Still, she wanted the words, and she wanted him to say them first. "Tell me about the flowers." He glanced around the kitchen.
"Do you like them?"
"Of course, I love flowers. But why are they covering my kitchen?"
Again, he sucked in a deep breath and appeared to brace himself. Then he moved to stand before her and took both her hands in his. He stared into her eyes, and the look in his caused her heart to begin pounding. "I spent a long time yesterday trying to compose the words I wanted to say to you today. You should see all the wadded-up balls of paper in my trash can. Nothing was right. Nothing expressed how I feel. The closest I could come was a metaphor, and the flowers are my effort to illustrate it. You see, my life has been a winter, cold and lonely and barren. Then one day last summer, you brought spring into my world. You are my springtime, Caitlin. You are color, bold, rich, explosive hues and soft pastels of peace. You are the exotic fragrance that tempts me and the sweet scent that soothes me. Your heart is rose petal soft, though you stand ready to wield your thorns when necessary to protect those you love." He brought first one hand and then the other to his mouth for a gentle kiss. "You are everything beautiful in my world. You are love, my love, and I hope my new beginning. I'm asking you to take a chance on me. I know the addiction thing is a great big red flag, but I'm standing here this morning giving you my solemn oath that I will do anything and everything necessary to keep that beast out of our lives. Trust me. Take a risk on me. Believe in me. Marry me, Caitlin. Be my wife and the mother to our children. I love you. Say yes. Please say yes and be my forever spring." Caitlin took his words into her heart as joy blossomed into watery eyes and a brilliant smile.
"That was good, Tarkington. Really, really good. I love the thought of being your spring. I love you. My answer is yes. Yes. Yes, I'll marry you and have our children. Yes, I'll trust you to never again be such an idiot about asking for help when you need it."
He closed his eyes and exhaled a heavy breath. "Thank God." Then his arms went around her, and he picked her up and twirled her around. Their lips met in a perfect kiss. the first kiss of spring.
Journal entry. Dear Diary, okay, maybe it's silly to channel my inner teenager as I begin this. The very first page of my very first journal on the very first day of my new life. But I don't care. It makes me happy. I am so very, very happy. Today at 2 p.m., I officially became Caitlin Tarkington. Mrs. Josh Tarkington. That's an old-fashioned anti-feminist manner of identification, but I love it. So sue me. I love him. It's been a perfect day. The wedding day of my dreams. Mom and I have had so much fun planning it for the past year. I never thought I'd be one to have a destination wedding. But getting married in Telluride felt right, and isn't all that far from Eternity Springs. I had a fabulous dress, A-line with a sweetheart neckline, with crystals and a glitter net. I felt like a Disney princess. Belle, of course, because I married my beast. We did suits instead of tuxedos. Gray, to match Josh's eyes. Dad looked so distinguished, and he joked as he walked me down the aisle. He wasn't perfectly steady, but that had nothing to do with his multifocal motor neuropathy, not ALS, thank God. The medicine Josh's doctor friend put him on after making the correct diagnosis has improved his condition significantly. Dad said he trembled just a little bit, because he was nervous about stepping on my dress. We made it through the ceremony without any disasters, and the reception was relaxed and so much fun. I'm still not exactly sure how it happened, but a guy caught my bouquet. Boone McBride. Mom said when the women went up for it, someone accidentally slapped it away and it hit the side of Boone's head, and he caught it instinctively. The guys ribbed him mercilessly about it, but Celeste gave him speculative looks the rest of the evening. And now, the honeymoon begins. We are spending our wedding night in Telluride, and tomorrow we fly to Europe. We'll be gone a month. Tuscany and Venice and the French Riviera. Then Paris. April in Paris. Someone should write a song. Now, dear diary, I will bring this to a close. It's time to take off my clothes and put on the Sokolov suite, necklace, earrings, and as of today, the ring. Josh has asked specifically that I indulge this particular fantasy of his. He said, "It's only appropriate that you wear green to our marriage bed tonight. This is St. Patrick's Day after all. And I am the luckiest man alive."
This concludes the reading of The First Kiss of Spring by Emily March. Copyright 2018 by Geraldine Dawson Williams. This book was read by Amy Landon. This unabridged recording was published by arrangement with Jane Rotrosen Agency, LLC, and was produced in 2018 by Blackstone Audio, Inc., which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audio, Inc. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.